Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. And my co-host for the program is Stone Payton, a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio. Good morning, Stone.
Well, good morning, sir. It's good to see you, man.
It's good to see you. Has this been a busy week at Business Radio X?
It has been a very busy week. I was visiting with the British consulate a few days ago to get prepped for that trip over there across the pond.
Did you wear jeans and your shirt, or did you put on a coat and tie for that?
I wore my nice jeans, the black jeans with the boots.
Oh, okay.
But it was my first day. I got to tell you about this place because it's very high security. They have a thing called an airlock. You ever been in an airlock?
Oh, yeah.
We had to walk through this airlock. I don't even know what the purpose of an airlock is, but that was very interesting. But those guys, I mean, I got to give a shout out to Ian Stewart and the British consulate. Those guys are great. We're going to go over to the UK in the middle of September.
Oh, my.
And we're going to put a couple of studios up there. And they are just bending over backwards to make introductions for us, help us navigate the banking aspects of it. And so it's all very heady. It's a lot of fun. And we're having a blast. Beats that kind of working.
So it's going it's going to be Business Radio X London branch.
It works for me. Yeah.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, each Right Here, Right Now program closes with this tagline. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right Here, Right Now. Well, Right Here, Right Now, through its shows and guests, encourages individuals to discover the power of the pen, and today's guests have mastered that power. And I'm hoping that they're going to discuss how they use that power of the pen in their careers. Our first guest is Chuck Reeves, a certified professional speaker. And he's not only that, he has received the highly coveted CPAE designation, Council of Peers Award for Excellence. It means he can really talk good, Stone. We may need to take notes from him. So actually, it means he's in the Professional Speakers Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Vietnam veteran, former top salesperson at AT&T, and he has written 7 books and numerous white papers, and is the founder of Sales Suite. Welcome, Chuck.
Tim, thank you for the invitation. Great to be here.
It is good to have you. So which came first, writing a book or being a professional speaker?
Actually, they coincided. What happened was I was at AT&T. I was their top salesperson 1 year. They applied the Peter Principle and made me a sales manager. If you take your best salesperson and make them a sales manager, typically you get 2 things, which is less sales and bad management.
So I see why he's in the Professional Hall of Fame for speakers.
At that time, AT&T was divesting itself of itself, and it was going through deregulation, and it was just getting ugly, and I wasn't allowed to sell. I had to spend my days putting numbers in boxes.
Oh, my.
Getting frustrated, didn't like the job. Someone came up and said, if you could do anything you wanted to do with your life, what would it be? And without thinking, I said, write and speak.
Oh, my.
Then they asked this asinine question, why don't you do that? And as creative as I am, I couldn't think of any reason why I shouldn't. So I quit my job and became a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who's listening, that's backwards. Keep the day job and keep that speaking thing going.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
I wrote the book, The Theory of 21, because I was doing motivational talks on the Theory of 21, which says simply, for every person who will say yes, there's 20 who will say no. For a positive response, you got to find the 21st person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing this motivational pablum, and I realized that if I had a book, that was all the credential I needed to get a speaking engagement. So I went through the traditional route. This was back in the 80s. Sent out 21 proposals because 20 people are going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
One said yes. The book came out, and I was in the speaking business. Now, as you know, the publishing industry has changed significantly since then.
It certainly has. It certainly has. My problem is what was to be my first book, I got 27 no's.
Your math was a little different than Chuck's.
Yeah,
one?
It was number 28 who said yes, but by that time it became my third book.
Wow!
But I understand that. Well, tell me how did you come up with this theory of 21?
Well, on Friday I was an account exec, and on Monday I was a national account manager. Knew absolutely nothing about what I was supposed to do. So I had a national account manager's desk. I had a national account manager's office. I'm sitting there. I don't have a clue what I'm supposed to do. So I don't learn well from books. I learn through observation.
Mm-hmm.
So I started watching the other sales managers, and I figured whatever they do, and I'll be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I started calling a series of meaningless meetings.
Meaningless
because as far
meetings.
As I could tell, that's all a sales manager was good for, was taking what would have been productive sales time and putting people in the conference room. So I called the team together, and I said, what questions do you have? Scared to death what they were going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
They all asked the same question. You were top salesperson last year. I want to be top salesperson this year. How did you do it? I didn't have a clue. I said, do what they taught us in sales school. They said, we're doing that. You're doing something different. What is it? I said, learn the products. They said, we're doing that. You're doing something different. What is it? We talked for 2 hours and finally figured out the only thing I was doing different was I never gave up.
Well, that's
so now
amazing.
Now I'm their manager, and they said, well, how many times do we have to go back and try to make the sale? I picked a number out of the air. I said 12.
Mm-hmm.
You try to close the sale 12 times. If it doesn't close, I will move it from your quota to my quota. I will actually make your sale for you.
Oh.
Not one of them ever came back.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you try often enough. I don't know if the customers felt sorry for me, if they got tired of seeing me or what, but enough of them, it's just a matter of persistence. Go back and try again. So when I wrote the book, I called it The Theory of 21 instead of The Theory of 12 because 21 is a card game. 21 mm-hmm. is when we come of age.
Mm-hmm.
Easy number to remember. It's 7 times 3. And we used the Roman numeral XXI, which was the original corporation, 21 Associates, so that people would know how to reach me. Because in those days, there was no internet.
Oh, of course.
I know there are children listening to this program who are thinking, how in the world could we survive without the internet?
Exactly.
So I was in, my last name is spelled R-E-A-V-E-S instead of R-E-E. And I knew if people could remember my name, they would spell it wrong, they would call information, and they would not be able to find me. So we were, and still are, in the phone books under the XXI, the T-W-E-N-T-Y, the numerical 2-1, just so people could find me. The book became the marketing tool.
And led you into the Professional Speakers Hall of Fame.
And here I am.
And look at that. Well, what was the challenge for you in writing? You know, I'm picturing here you are. You say, yeah, I think I'd like to write and speak. You're a national sales director, having been a national sales leader, and you've said you didn't know anything about that. So what did you know about writing a book?
Not squat.
That's what I figured you'd say. And how did that go for you?
Ignorance has taken me a long way in life. What I did is I picked up a copy, what is it, Writer's Market or something like that thick book that's been out forever.
Writer's Market.
And just went through the guidelines. Here's what you do.
Wow.
Now, what they said was you put together a proposal, and they explained how to do it.
Yes, they do.
I highly recommend using a third party for that. Most people are not equipped to do that.
That's correct.
So you need a third party to come. But anyway, they said put together a proposal, mail it to a publisher, wait 6 weeks to 8 months, and they'll send you something called a rejection letter.
Yeah.
And then you can send it to somebody else.
Yes, you can.
My book is The Theory of 21. How many publishers did I send it to?
You sent them to 21.
Because?
You wanted the 21st one to say yes.
That's it.
You had to prove your theory that you
had
just,
to prove
that
the
you
theory.
Pulled it out of thin air anyway. So what did you have? You might have had to change that to the theory of 19.
Yeah, or 87.
Yeah, that too.
Depending on how it went.
Yeah.
So on Wednesday, I carried all 21 proposals down to the post office.
Oh, man.
Gave them to the postmaster, said a little prayer, went home to wait 6 weeks to 8 months. On Friday, my phone rang. This editor said, I like what I see. Is the book still available? What did I say?
Oh, wow.
Well, let me think.
Yes. She said, the other editors are going to read it this weekend. Don't do anything until I call you back on Monday. I said, well, okay. Now, what could I do? Nobody else had called, right?
That's right.
Monday, she called back. Tuesday, we had a contract. How long did it take me to sell the book using the Theory of 21?
5 days.
Yeah. What started coming in the mail after that?
Rejection after rejection.
Oh, yes. And when I speak to audiences, I have copies of them in a binder, and I hold them up where people can see them. This is the legitimate world.
Mm-hmm.
You know who Prentice Hall is, one of the largest publishing houses in the world?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They knew who I was. Oh, their rejection letter started out, "Dear author." Doesn't that sound good?
Oh, it sure does.
They knew I was an author. Then they went on and checked the block they thought was most appropriate
for
my work.
Yes, they did. I've seen letters like that. You know, I always figured it. They just misspelled my name because my middle name is Arthur.
Oh, there we go. It's just
and
a
it's just
typo.
Off by, you know, one or two letters. So mine are at least a little closer to being personal than yours.
Oh, my gosh.
So you followed the Writer's Digest on our Writer's Market, How to Write. Mm-hmm. You challenged me to ask you this question, and I've got to ask it. I'm intrigued by it. What are the myths and mistakes of writing?
You know, every industry is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that the writing publishing industry is going to stop changing anytime soon. With desktop publishing, there are just tons of books out there. So
that's
almost
right.
Anyone can write a book. And attracting the eye of an agent now is as difficult as it used to be to attract a publisher. It's just getting more and more difficult.
That is correct, yeah.
The idea is, first of all, one of the myths is it's hard to write a book. Most of my clients are CEOs. I speak at the executive level.
Mm-hmm.
I've encouraged every one of them to write a book.
Good.
Because
good.
What they have learned about life, success, the real messages, their wisdom is going to be lost when they're lost unless they write it down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they all have the same argument. I don't have time. I'm not a writer, yada, yada. So what I encourage them to do is walk around with a digital recorder. And when you have ideas, when you have thoughts, speak them in.
That's exactly right.
And if you don't feel good about that, carry around an iPad. Carry around a notepad if you still remember how to use pencil and paper. Capture the ideas,
mm-hmm.
and then find someone that will ghostwrite it for you. There are a lot of people out there who are great at assembling powerful thoughts. And they can actually formulate that. It's like giving me a bunch of ingredients and sending me in the kitchen. I'm going to come out with soup. That's all I know how to do is soup. But if you gave those same ingredients to a chef, they mm-hmm. would come out with a meal that would be worthy for a king.
Yeah.
So we need to have people who are specialists there. Secondly, don't expect the book to be a bombshell bestseller.
Oh, really? I run into that with my clients. I kid you not. My clients say, this is going to be a bestseller, and Hollywood's going to make a movie out of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Absolutely.
I want to run the other direction.
So if on one end of the spectrum, we expect stardom out of our book,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and on the other end of the spectrum, we expect complete failure. I sold 3 copies, and Mother bought 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then look at what's in the middle. Have a purpose for the book. And the purpose for the book is not national acclaim.
No, it's not
revenue.
Mm-hmm.
What do you really want that book to do for you? And the reason I ask CEOs to write, and I'm asking them right now, I'm doing a webinar this afternoon where I'm interviewing a CEO who's written 2 books now.
Oh,
his
great.
Second one's out. What I want them to do right now is start putting it together so that by the end of the year, that book will be in their hands, and more importantly, in their employees' hands.
There you go. That's
this
exciting.
This is my
Absolutely.
Philosophy. This is the way I want to run the business. And they think they're communicating with their people. They're not. When I had employees, I wasn't communicating with mine.
But now you know how to do that.
Yeah.
Now you know how to do that. And you know, really, you've given me a nice lead-in to say that that's what my company, Right Choice Services, does. And I really focus in on those CEOs to help them get those stories told. When I do presentations, and I really can't remember the source of this, but I always use it, and that is to say, when a person dies, an entire library dies with that person.
Oh, absolutely.
The ideas, the concepts, everything that could be in there. And so that's why I encourage people just to write. put down their story so that we have them.
Or we're going to lose them.
Or we are, and definitely.
It doesn't have to be business. I meet with a small group of men every Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them has been writing letters to my children. And he started when the kids were able to read.
What a neat idea.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
And so what we've encouraged him to do now is to sanitize them as much as necessary. If there's anything intimate in there that doesn't mm-hmm. belong in the public domain, let's publish this. Would you love to read those letters?
Well, I just happen to have written a second book called Letters to My Sons.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. In fact,
every man should do that.
So Dr. Tim's reaching in his briefcase.
Just happened to have a copy, but that came out.
And you're asking for my credit card? Gee, give me a break here.
Cash. Guests pay cash. No. But, you know, I was in ministry, and my sons kept saying to me, "Dad, you're so different."
I said, you know, I get that some, too.
You get that, too? But they really wanted a background understanding of how I came up with the theology and all that I did. And I started off writing, and I was 50 pages into it, and I couldn't go any further, and I realized I was writing a theological dissertation to my boys who were 14 and 18, and I thought, no. So that's when I reverted back to letters. But I'll tell you what's really exciting for me right now, Chuck, is I talked with my boys earlier this year, and they are now 31 and 27. They are writing letters to me, reflecting on this book and how it impacted them and what they've done with it. And I'm going to write some revised letters. And we hope by the end of the year to have letters to Dad, letters to my sons. And we're just excited about it. So, and all that is to, one, promote my book, and two, to encourage you with what you're doing.
And encourage everybody needs to write a book. You need to
absolutely.
Write. My mother is in the mid-stage Alzheimer's, so we're losing her mentally. But we found some documents that she had written about her childhood, I have now published those. We have a family reunion coming up in a couple of months. Everyone's going to get a copy of Aunt Wanda's memoirs.
Oh, that's great.
Another gentleman that I know hired a writer to go down and interview his parents. He spent 3 days doing nothing but interviewing and recording his parents, converted it into a book, and gave it to the entire family for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of their most treasured possessions because the kids were learning things about their parents they didn't know.
That's
and about
right.
their grandparents, obviously, that they didn't know.
And one of the key pieces in that kind of memory recording is that we all have different perspective. You know, when I wrote this letters to my sons, I did put a chapter in on my sister, and she was really worried. She thought it was going to be payback by baby brother.
Oh, good.
And I did not disabuse.
Oh, you're against that, or you're for
I
that?
I did not disabuse her of that thought. I just let her be worried, and then when the book came out, she could read it. But what we've discovered is that even though we were raised by the same parents in the same house, we had totally different perspectives.
Absolutely.
And that's fascinating
Absolutely.
For people to learn and to share. And it really gets conversation going among family members.
Yeah, and we see differently based on our lens. Our lens are our education and our experience.
Sure they are.
So females see things differently than males. That's not politically incorrect. Like I mentioned, you mentioned your sons. You
mm-hmm.
said they're 31 and 27?
Yes.
Your wife will say your sons are 27 and 31.
Oh, really?
Women, the last one they nurtured is the first one that comes to mind. For us guys, we're trying to make hunters and gatherers out of
That's
them.
That's true.
So we start with the oldest one.
That puts everything into perspective. I was the baby, and I was the baby until my mother died. And,
oh, wow. See, you know, that's how it works.
You got
that's
it.
How it works.
Well, you know, you and I, I'm afraid, we could talk forever, but I want to get our other guest in here. You're willing to say, what's your contact information? If people want to be in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Two easy websites. One is www.chuckreeves.com. Just remember, we spell Reeves, R-E-A-V-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
And an even easier one is salesuites.com, S-A-L-E-S-S-U-I-T-E-S.com. So
okay.
chuckreeves.com or salesuites.com, 1-800-MR-REEVES. We'll get my office. If you can't remember that, 1-800-MR-WRIGHT will ring into my home.
Oh, my. I see. Yes, it will. Well, I asked you earlier, and you threatened to walk, but you will stay while I interview our next guest.
Absolutely. I'll go wake Tim up so you can talk to him.
Okay. Thank you. Well, Tim Fulton publishes his own award-winning electronic monthly newsletter called Small Business Matters for Small Business Owners, and he's currently working on his first book. Tim is a Vistage Group Chair in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Managing Partner at TCF Business Development. Welcome, Tim. This could be fun, Tim and Tim, huh?
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Stone. I realized two things as I was sitting here listening. One is I've had the pleasure of hearing Chuck Reeves speak several times.
Have
and he is a terrific speaker, and I enjoy every time I get to listen to him, and I was reminded of that this morning. Second is I also realized I need to be very careful who I follow on a show like this, because I can't possibly say anything more interesting, anything more provocative than what you've already heard.
Well, okay, here's the $2.
That puts the challenge in me as the host to make you, and this will not be an effort at all to make you sound really good. Let's start simply. Tell us about your monthly e-newsletter.
Sure. Small Business Matters is the newsletter. I've been publishing it since 2003, so going on 8 years, nine years. It started off just as a product of love, of something I'm very interested in, and that's entrepreneurship and working with small business owners. And I found that a lot of my clients who are small business owners were looking for more information. How can I be more effective with my people? How can I grow my companies? How can I exit the business? They always had questions, and I just thought it would be useful to take the information that I knew, that I had gathered through my own experience as a business owner, and put that into a monthly newsletter. And I found that to be true, that I consistently hear from clients and from readers that they enjoy the information, and they look forward to receiving the newsletter.
Well, how do you come up with the ideas that you put in that? That's on call every month.
It's not always easy. I was a serial entrepreneur for the first half of my career, for about the first 15 years, and I had some success, and I made a lot of mistakes. So I find a lot of my articles are from those mistakes, from hiring mistakes that I made, from mistakes that I made with customers, or, again, sometimes success. And so a lot of my articles are based on those experiences. They're stories. I guess the easiest way to say they're stories that I share with my clients from my own experience.
Well, what that suggests to me is you're obviously comfortable with yourself and who you are, because there aren't a whole lot of people who would be willing to put out into the public, man, did I mess up on that one?
Yeah.
What's the reaction when you share those kinds of learn from my mistake? Do you hear back from the people who read the story?
I do, and oftentimes it's I've made that same mistake, or boy, I'm glad you shared this with me because I was about to make that same mistake, whether, again, it was a mistake around funding their business, about growing their business. People mistakes, those are probably the most common, because those are the decisions we face every day is with our people. And so they appreciate, you know, being able to hear my stories. And again, in some cases, they've made those same mistakes or they're about to make those mistakes.
So you save a lot of anguish and maybe even money. Do you ask for a percentage on the return that they saved?
Well, I should. And in some cases, I think I produce anguish, because in some cases, they're about to make those mistakes and they don't realize it.
Well, I'm going to take a guess. Are your newsletters going to be the source or the foundation for the book you're working on?
It is, and I appreciate you asking that. I've been, again, writing the newsletter, writing articles for over 10 years, and I've always wanted to write a book, and it's spurred in part by what you heard from Chuck. And I thought, well, how would I go about doing that? And it occurred to me that I've got all the content that I need. I've dozens of articles that I've written. And the idea came, why not just accumulate those articles, put them together into a book? Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm in the process of doing now. And the book at this point is entitled Small Business Matters.
Well, gee, let's do some math here. 8 years, 12 months in a year, 96 articles. You probably have Small Business Matters Volume 1, 2, and 3, if you do this right. But that's exciting. Are you following a theme? Are you taking what you think are your 10 best or 15 best, or what? How are you putting that all together?
That's what I've done, is I've gone through the articles and tried to choose the ones that I thought were favorites, because some of them I've used several times in my newsletter based on the feedback that I've gotten from my readers. And so I hope it's a collection of favorites, and I hope that I'll have several more books in the future.
Well, that's exciting. I wish you well on that adventure. I mean, Chuck has written a ton of books, or a half ton at least, because I've seen them and I've read them, and you know, I have four of my own. It's just fun, and you still have all your hair. A lot of people pull it out when they write, so that's great.
Yeah, wait till you start speaking on the topics. That's when the hair turns gray or falls out.
Is that it? You know,
do you plan to do that? Do you plan to go out and speak on these?
Would love to. I've done a lot of speaking.
Oh, okay.
Through the years, and I find that this will give me a platform of sort to do more speaking.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're one of the area chairs for Vistage. I'm familiar with that, but I have a feeling a lot of our listeners are not. Could you educate them about Vistage, what it does?
Sure, Tim, I'd be happy to. Vistage is the world's largest CEO membership organization. It's been around for over 50 years. We've got 14,000 members around the world. Like 17 different countries. Here in Atlanta, we got started in the mid-1980s. We've got about 400 members here in the Atlanta area. And essentially, it's a peer-to-peer membership organization. These are small groups of CEOs who get together on a monthly basis. It's an opportunity as a business owner to relieve some of the isolation that a lot of business owners feel. You know, they feel like it's all them. They've got no one else to talk to. It's also an opportunity to grow themselves as business leaders. It's an opportunity to grow their businesses. Many of our members are some of the fastest growing small businesses in Atlanta. Inc. 500 Inc. magazine recognizes their fastest growing businesses every year. Many of our members are part of that Inc. 500. And it also gives them an opportunity to be, how should I put this? Many small business owners find themselves reacting to change on a daily basis. We like to think that Vistage gives them an opportunity to become more proactive to all the changes that business owners face, so they can be more successful in growing their business.
Okay. How do you pragmatically do that? Mm-hmm. You've given us the theory, and I follow that, but today's Tuesday. I'm a CEO. I'm part of Vistage. What can I do this? What will you do for me this week if I have something troubling me?
It's oftentimes for many of my members, it's just an opportunity to talk out loud about any one of the dozen of issues that they're facing on a particular day. And by being able to talk out loud, to share it with someone who's not an employee, who's not an investor, not a vendor, who can talk objectively about that issue, that decision. It could be a hiring decision. It could be an expansion decision. It could be an exit decision. But just to be able to talk out loud and get a third opinion, an outside perspective on that particular issue, could be extremely helpful to the business owner.
And it's a safe setting. I assume, you know, one of the cardinal rules would be confidentiality then.
Absolutely. Very important. Confidentiality, not only between myself and the business owner, but also within the group. Mm-hmm. We call it the Las Vegas rule, that everything that comes to a Vistage meeting
stays
in the Vistage
meeting.
Stays there.
Yeah. Their money too? Does it say? You know,
absolutely, yeah.
Well, that has to be refreshing, though, for a CEO. I would think that it could get a little bit lonely, and to be able to have that substantive conversation from someone that has no vested financial interest, I'm assuming, and is not trying to sell you something, and yet they've been there and can share their experience. That has to be incredibly valuable.
Very much so. I found as a business owner that oftentimes there were things that I would have loved to talk about with someone other than my employees, other than my wife, other than my banker, and yet I felt isolated. I didn't have that person or that group to be able to talk to, and I think that's where Vistage or an organization like Vistage really is extremely valuable to its members.
But if you'd had it, you probably wouldn't have a book today, would you? I had to say that, but you, because of your experiences, you put a serial entrepreneur and the successes and the failures. You are just prime as a chair for Vistage to really understand what so many of these people are going through.
It is. It's very helpful that I've sat in that chair that they sit in. Mm-hmm. Again, I've made the mistakes that they've made or pondering making, and I've learned from those and feel comfortable being able to share those experiences with my members.
Well, have you challenged your your CEOs to write, like Chuck said, he challenges people to do?
I have. I fully agree that I think every adult, certainly every business owner, has a book in them, has a story to tell. And from my own experience, it's been so helpful. You know, it certainly lends a lot of credibility to my role as a small business consultant. And I'm an author that I've written, that I've been published. It's great marketing. You know, I use the term drip marketing, that every month I'm able to drip. I'm able to share something with my clients. I've got over 1,300 people that are on my database for the newsletter.
That's exciting.
I'm able to touch each of those people on a regular basis. And it's interesting that I'll have someone who I've not spoken to for months, sometimes years, and they'll get my newsletter and I'll hear from them and they'll say, I need to get together. I need help. Or I need to share something with you. So it's very effective in terms of drip marketing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the last thing that does for me, and Chuck, I hope and I'm confident that you found this, is it's a great kind of academic experience, is that it forces me to grow. It forces me to do a lot of reading. And because I know every month I've got to come up with new material for that newsletter. So in terms of my own growth, it's been very helpful.
Well, great. Well, I see Chuck's getting primed here, and that's good because you've challenged him. Tim, people want to be in contact with you, ask about your writing, Vistage. What's the best way for them to be in touch with you?
Tim, very simply, my email address, timfulton@hotmail.com. That's the easiest way, by email. The website is smallbusinessmattersonline.com, smallbusinessmattersonline.com.
Okay, well, now we're going to open up the mics, and you both can dialogue, and I bet you Stone has a question or two, but Chuck, you look primed there.
Once again, Tim is underselling himself. I don't know why the man just won't step up to the plate. First of all, his newsletter is not only good, it's important. If you have a small business, it's the kind of dialogue you need to have coming in over the transom to challenge you. So we're all getting a lot of newsletters now, and we just have to opt out. We just don't have an option anymore. There's just too many of them. His is one that I'll never opt out of. It's that important. Now, when I pull his newsletter up, he may have a section in there that does not apply to my business. And that's just fine. I don't have employees anymore, so something to do with employees, I might pass over that. Secondly, I've spoken to 700 Vistage groups, so I know a little bit about what makes...
That's impressive.
What makes a good Vistage group.
Uh-huh. And I'll stop him and just mention, because I know he won't share this, he was actually named Speaker of the Year 1 year for Vistage. That's out of 2,000 speakers, largest speakers bureau in the country, he was named Speaker of the Year.
Oh, that is exciting.
So really what I'm trying to do is get my $2 back here. But every Vistage experience is a valuable experience, but some chairs, which is the title of the facilitator, some chairs are better than others.
Mm-hmm.
So you suggested that Tim's business experience would help make him a good chair. Well, it can also make him a terrible chair, because some people who have a lot of business experience hear the member talk about their issue, and they immediately want to jump in and cure it for them.
Fix it.
And the best chairs are the ones like Tim who have the business experience, force the member to frame their issue in more meaningful and detailed ways, and then work through the issue.
So it becomes less of a gripe session and more of let's really look at what's going on.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go to my chair for all the answers.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Great. Right. What else do you want to challenge him on?
Well, he's not promoting my book enough.
Tim, if I might, I'd like to add on to something that Chuck was talking about, the importance for a writer to overcome adversity. And I think my guess is if you talk to a lot of writers, that would be a common theme. And I saw something interesting that was reminded of. They were trying to figure out what makes for an effective, successful business owner. And the first given was it had to be intelligence, IQ.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually took a group of small business owners, successful small business owners, and they tested their IQ. And lucky for me, maybe lucky for other business owners, they found no connection between IQ and the ability to be successful as a small business owner. So then they said, well, if there's not a connection with intelligence, it must be their ability to get along with people. They're what's referred to nowadays as your emotional quotient. That's got to be a tie with entrepreneurial success. So again, they tested the group looked at their EQ versus their success as a business owner. And again, they found no connection between the two, which I found to be very interesting because I find a lot of my members are good people to be around. I would assume they have a high emotional quotient, but no correlation between those two, entrepreneurial success and EQ. So then they scratched their head and they said, okay, what is it? What is it that really creates a successful small business owner? And what they found was their ability to overcome adversity. And they could actually calculate this. They call it an adversity quotient. They can measure it. And sure enough, there was a very strong correlation between one's adversity quotient and their ability to be the potential to be successful as a small business owner. My guess is if you gave that same test to successful writers, mm-hmm. they would have very mm-hmm. high adversity quotients because just hearing Chuck talk, you've got to overcome so much adversity. One is just picking up the pen and starting to write.
That's
overcoming adversity and then trying to get published, trying to promote it. So I find a strong connection between success in business and success in writing, being able to overcome adversity.
Mm-hmm. And you plan to overcome that adversity, don't you?
I hope so.
That's great.
It's easier to overcome adversity if you're passionate about what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
So for me, that whole passion issue is what kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hit the wall and I think this just isn't going to work, then what I want to do is retreat, go back in my shell and say, who do you think you are? And go home and kiss the dog and kick the wife.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Instead, what I have to realize is this is a burning desire.
Yeah.
That's a part of my core. It's there for a reason. I need to pursue this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to be happy. I'm not going to rest until I do.
That speaks to me as a writer as well, because that's what's motivated the writing that I've done. It just convinced that there's something that I want to share, I need to share. Well, Stone, I'm going to run by you one more time. You got anything you want to throw out?
Well, yeah, I mean, so many of our listeners are aspiring authors and aspiring speakers, and I wonder if each of you might take a crack at just sharing any tactical advice you might have for someone who's trying to break through the speaking. I think that there's a lot of challenges in that arena, and maybe you guys have lived through this, and maybe you just have a couple of pieces of very tactical advice for someone who wants to become a speaker.
I'll go first. Several things come to mind, Stone. One is, and I mentioned this earlier, is the power of telling stories. I find that the speakers that I'm most attracted to, the books that I am most attracted to, have great stories in them. And so I think being able to be a good storyteller, an effective storyteller, would be one. Being brief. Again, going back to whether it's a great speaker or a great book, I want to get across the message, but be brief. So many times I hear people speak and they go on and on, and that's a kiss of death for me when I bring in a speaker or if I'm reading a book. And the third thing that comes to mind is being personal. It's something I try to do in my writing is I try to include me in the story because I find that my readers want to get to know me more. And I think that's true for a speaker and in writing as well, is being comfortable being personal in both your writing and your speaking. Chuck, I'm sure you've got much more.
If you want to be a great writer, write. If you want to be a great speaker, speak. There is only one way to hone these crafts, and that's to get out and do it. The second stage is to find people that will tell you your baby is ugly. Somebody that will critique it.
There you go.
I mean, don't ask mother what she thinks about it.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Really. Yeah. And the reason I come in on that is when clients come to me and they present me with their manuscript and say, you know, my mom thinks it's great, my aunt, my uncle, I just cringe because I know it's my job to say, as you put it, Chuck, your baby is ugly.
Yes, and we need to hear that because it's still a baby. It still has life.
Well,
it still has purpose.
Absolutely.
We just need to put some lipstick on the pig to make it marketable.
Yeah, which comes in the form of editing and rewriting and
absolutely.
Rewriting.
There is no reason for anyone in or near a major metropolitan area who wants to write to not be a part of a writer's group, to not be a part of a speaker's group. Mm-hmm. The National Speakers Association is headquartered in Tempe. There are chapters all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta has one, the Georgia Speakers or NSA Georgia.
Yeah.
Don't reinvent the wheel. Sit down with people who have done it before and find out where the stumps are so you don't trip over them.
There you go. There you go. Well, once again, the clock is on us. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Just send an email to whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Stone, for co-hosting and keeping us collectively on track today. And thank you to our guests, Chuck Reeves and Tim Fulton. Chuck, your contact information again?
Chuck@chuckreeves.com. That's the easiest.
R-E-A-V-E-S.
R-E-A-V-E-S.
Okay, and Tim?
Tim Fulton at hotmail.com and smallbusinessmattersonline.com.
Okay. Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, that's W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.